content. Parental discretion is advised.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. It's 10. No, it's not 10. It's 11. Excuse me. 11 p.m. Eastern Time, Wednesday, August 5th, 2020. I got real excited because this is the third time we've tried to do this show due to technical difficulties, for which we apologize. But we are back in black. And thank you for joining us for the 90th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We'll be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. As always, thank you very much for that, and if you don't mind, please let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
Well, since I, since we're going to be talking about bipolar disorder, I thought it would be appropriate to play Jimi Hendrix's Manic Depression, which is what bipolar used to be called.
Yes, very, very fitting. Excellent choice. As Dr. Mathis mentioned, tonight's episode is entitled Lithium, Bipolar Disorder, which we will discuss in a moment. Before we begin our topic discussion, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
So what I thought I'd do tonight is just talk about various people in a number of music genres, all of whom have bipolar disorder, some of which will not be a surprise to you, some of which you're going to be going, oh, wow. And I have to say that some of these folks I've never even heard of, but a vast majority of them I have. So I arrange them in alphabetical order. So the first one on the list is Lily Allen, Michael Angelakos, Emily Autumn, Max Bemis, who sings for an alternative band, Mariah Carey, Aaron Carter, Rosemary Clooney, which I had no clue, Kurt Cobain, shock.
Yeah, shocker.
Sean Costello, Vincent Crane, the keyboard player for Atomic Rooster, and the guy that played on, what's that guy's name? Where's the thing on his head? Arthur Brown, The Crazy World of Arthur Brown. Fire.
Oh, okay.
I bid you, YouTuber, and that's Vincent Crane on keyboards. excuse me, and Carl Palmer on drums, 17 years old or 18 years old. Adam Deacon, Mike Dowdy, Tom Fletcher, Connie Francis, Anjun Suk, Anjun Suk, who I've never heard of, have no idea who that is, Matthew Good, Boone Gould, Beth Hart, Charles Hamilton, Halsey, Terry Hall, Jimi Hendrix, surprise, surprise, Kristen Hirsch, Meg Hutchinson, Jill Janis, Daniel Johnson, Sarah Joyce, Chris Calico, Mary Lambert, Demi Lovato, Lee Jung, who I have no idea who that is either, or Ellen Joyce Liu.
She's newer, yeah.
C.J. McMahon, Allison Moyette, Peter Mook, Sinead O'Connor, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, that we knew.
Phil Oakes, Dolores O'Riordan, Craig Owens, Stephen Page, Jaco Pastorius, who everybody knows, that was a really super famous jazz bass player, probably one of the best jazz bass players of all time. Odin Pope, Charlie Pride, which really surprised me. Stephen Page, Audrey Peoples, Lou Reed, Babe Rexha, Jason Rishi, Reggie Sears, Nina Simone, Frank Sinatra, Yo-Yo Honey Singe, who I have no idea who that is, Scott Stapp, shock, shock, Peter Steele, who was a surprise to me, the bassist vocalist for, who's that goth band? Typo Negative.
Bauhaus? Oh, yes, okay.
I think died of a drug overdose several years ago. Matthew Sweet, Devin Townsend, Towns Van Zandt, Tom Warrior, here's another shocker, Scott Weiland, yes, surprise, surprise, Pete Wentz, Kanye West, and Brian Wilson.
Yeah, that's a big one. And he needs to get back on his meds.
Well, Brian, my understanding is Brian also has schizophrenia, so this is like a bad combination. I don't know if he just had psychotic breaks during uber manic periods or if he's like officially schizophrenic or whatever, but yeah. So you can see there's a boatload of musicians in all genres because some of these folks are alternative folks, some of these folks are metal folks, some of these folks are classic rock folks and torch singers and alternative kind of, you know, strange folks, if you will, strange music folks, and it's just all over the map. And I wanted to kind of give a shout out to that because, you know, I think a lot of times people think, oh, you know, whatever. But it's also, you'll notice that a fair amount of those folks either did what I would call accidental suicide or intentional suicide. And that's a common co-occurring disorder, condition with bipolar disorder. It is not uncommon for those folks, particularly the bipolar ones, to off themselves. And I can't really blame them. They get tired of that crap, and you know, I would too. So that's my trivia list for this evening.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I recognize some names. I find it interesting, and we'll talk about later tonight. We'll go over the history of bipolar as a diagnosis, but. Am I remembering it somewhat correctly that, like many pathologies we know now, it really wasn't solidified probably until the DSM came out? So some of those names surprise me because they're old enough to where they kind of predate the DSM as adults.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little shocked.
Well, I think what's happened is a lot of these folks came out, got a quote-unquote accurate diagnosis, having previously been either misdiagnosed or diagnosed as something else, they had several co-occurring disorders, and they just assumed that the bipolar behavior, if you will, was a consequence of something else. So, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Cool. Well, that was very informative. So thank you for that. And
You're welcome.
I'm sorry to see the list is so big, and I'm actually mildly concerned. I bet there's a lot of musicians that maybe ought to be on the list, and nobody's really gotten it right yet, and so they're not getting the help they need. But,
and that's just
musicians
and vocalists. That's how I'm seeing
it. Yeah, it doesn't include, others, the crew and, other people peripherally involved in the industry and so forth.
Actors and actresses and famous.
Oh, that's a whole other episode. Yep.
Right. And famous sports people, athletes.
Yes. And it's interesting. There seems to be a disproportionate amount of people in the creative arts who have pathologies
if their brains are getting jacked up with the mania, excuse me, particularly if they have the bipolar 1 and the brains are getting jacked up with the mania, that's going to cause them to get all sorts of tangential, creative ADHD-esque kinds of things because they're getting that tangential. I sort of describe mania as all psyched up and no place to go. if they have a lot of this loose, psychological energy going on, what better outlet to do that than either, act the theater, drama, sculpting, acting, painting, music, something creative to get that frustration crap out. And then, with the excess of dopamine, they're just going in all sorts of directions. So.
Yeah. Fair point. All right. Well, thank you for that. And again, we will take calls from our listeners and questions in the online chat room throughout the rest of the evening until around midnight. So feel free to give us a call. And again, the number is 914-338-0314. And from the title of the episode tonight, I have a little snippet for you guys, as I have been doing lately. So I'm just going to pull that up. If you give me a hot second, here we go.
I'm so lonely. That's okay. I'm not sad, and just maybe I'm to blame for all I've heard. I'm not sure, I'm so excited, I can't wait to meet you there. I don't care, I'm so horny, that's okay, my will is
I know I cut it off at the good part. Sorry about that, guys, but we do have a 30-second roll. So anyway, just a little snippet of Lithium. Kurt Cobain, who was on the list earlier from Nirvana. And tonight's topic is Lithium bipolar disorder. So bipolar disorder is one of the more commonly known mental health issues in our culture. And yet a lot of people either do not understand what it actually is, or go by distorted notions gleaned from media, entertainment, social media, or word of mouth and anecdotes. Many people, even currently today, are still operating with out-of-date or incomplete information and understanding of the pathology. Those who have it are frequently misdiagnosed or go undiagnosed because of these misunderstandings, not only amongst lay people, but some relevant professionals such as teachers, school administrators, law enforcement officers, employers, for example. They can live their lives well into adulthood, enduring potentially unnecessary symptoms that can disrupt their lives. We hope tonight to dispel the bad data and help people to clear up their understanding of this pathology for the benefit of themselves or possibly someone else in their circle who may need their help and understanding. So tonight we will discuss first, the history of bipolar disorder as a diagnosis. Second, an overview of bipolar disorder as it's understood today. Third, myths and misconceptions about bipolar disorder. And lastly, suggestions for coping and mitigating the symptoms. And before we get started diving into this, I'm going to check in with Dr. Mathis. Do you have anything you want to add before we jump in?
No, let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it then. History of bipolar disorder. So let's begin with an overview of some of the basics that have led up to our current understanding of this particular pathology. The source for this part is Psychology Today online. The terms used for the bipolar extremes, melancholy, in other words, depression, and mania, both have their origins in ancient Greek. And I know Dr. Mathis is going to jump up and down because he loves this part. Melancholy derives from melas, black, and chole, C-H-O-L-E, bile, because Hippocrates thought that depression resulted from an excess of black bile. Mania is related to menos, spirit, force, passion. Now, I don't think I can pronounce this part, but you're the Greek expert. So M-A-I-N-E-S-T-H-A-I is pronounced how?
Menthesal. Menthesae.
And that is said to be to rage or to go mad.
Yeah.
And the word mantis, seer, and ultimately derives from the Indo-European root men or mind, to which, interestingly, man is also sometimes connected. Depression, the clinical term for melancholy, is much more recent in origin and derives from the Latin deprimere, press down or sink down. From Healthline, that's the source of this next part, Areteus of Cappadocia began the process of detailing symptoms in the medical field as early as the first century in Greece. His notes on the link between mania and depression went largely unnoticed for many centuries. The ancient Greeks and Romans were responsible for the terms mania and melancholia, which are now the modern-day manic and depressive. They even discovered that using lithium salts in baths calmed manic people and lifted the spirits of depressed people. Today, lithium is a common treatment for people with bipolar disorder. The Greek philosopher Aristotle not only acknowledged melancholy as a condition, but cited it as the inspiration for the great artists of this time. And that, I guess, goes back to our earlier question about, you know, being more creative types with that pathology. Now we know a portion of why that might be. It was common during this time for people across the globe to be executed for having bipolar disorder and other mental conditions. As the study of medicine advanced, strict religious dogma stated that these people were possessed by demons and should therefore be put to death. And that's why music sucked in the first century. I'm just kidding. source for the next part of Psychology Today. Yeah.
Could it be Satan?
It could be. And this next part is a repeat of what I said earlier, so I'm not going to bother reading that. That is my mistake. I apologize. And we're just going to skip on by. All right. So next thing. Studies of bipolar disorder skipping ahead to the 17th century. Because obviously in the Dark Ages, nobody was researching much of anything. In the 17th century, Robert Burton wrote the book The Anatomy of Melancholy, which addresses the issue of treating melancholy, non-specific depression, using music and dance. While mixed with medical knowledge, the book primarily serves as a literary collection of commentary on depression and a vantage point of the full effects of depression on society. It did, however, expand deeply into the symptoms and treatments of what's now known as clinical depression, major depressive disorder. Later that century, Theophilus Bonnet published a great work titled Sepulchritum, a text that grew from his experience performing 3,000 autopsies. In it, he linked mania and melancholy in a condition called manicomelancholicus. This was a substantial step forward in diagnosing the disorder because mania and depression were most often considered separate disorders at this time. Next is the 19th century, Falre's findings. French psychiatrist Jean-Pierre Falre published an article in 1851 describing what he called la folie circulaire, which translates roughly to circular insanity. The article details people switching through severe depression and manic excitement and is considered to be the first documented diagnosis of bipolar disorder. In addition to making the first diagnosis, Falre also noted the genetic connection in bipolar disorder, something medical professionals still support to this day. Source for the next part of Psychology Today again. It's a little bit of a repeat of earlier with expanded information. The modern psychiatric concept of bipolar disorder has its origins in the 19th century. In 1854, Jules Bélarger, 1809 to 1890, and Jean-Pierre Faure independently presented descriptions of this disorder to the Académie de Médecine in Paris. Bélarger called the illness folie à double forme, dual form insanity, whereas Faure called it folie circulaire, circular insanity. Faure observed that the disorder clustered in families and correctly postulated that it had a strong genetic basis. The next step forward is in the 20th century, Kraepelin's and Leonhard's classifications. The history of bipolar disorder changed with Emil Kraepelin, a German psychiatrist who broke away from Sigmund Freud's theory that society and the suppression of desires played a large role in mental illness. And, you know, we know Freud had his own problems. Kraepelin recognized biological causes of mental illnesses. He's believed to be the first person to seriously study mental illness. Kraepelin's, quote, manic depressive insanity and paranoia, which appears to be a paper, but I wasn't clear if it was a paper or a book, in 1921, detailed the difference between manic depressive and praecox, which is now known as schizophrenia. His classification of mental disorders remains the basis used by professional associations today. Source for the next part, Psychology Today again. In the early 1900s, the eminent German psychiatrist Emil Kraepelin studied the natural course of the untreated disorder and found it to be punctuated by relatively symptom-free intervals. On this basis, he distinguished the disorder from démence précoce, which is schizophrenia, it's French for dementia praecox, basically, and coined the term manic depressive psychosis to describe it. Kraepelin emphasized that, in contrast to démence précoce, manic depressive psychosis had an episodic course and a more benign outcome. Interestingly, Kraepelin did not distinguish between people with both manic and depressive episodes and people with only depressive episodes with psychotic symptoms. This distinction dates back only to the 1960s and is largely responsible for the modern emphasis on bipolarity and hence on mood elevation as a defining feature of the disorder. A professional classification system for mental disorders had its earliest roots in the 50s from German psychiatrist Carl Leonhard and others. This symptom was important, the system, excuse me, was important to better understand and treat these conditions. And the last chunk before we get to the present day, late 20th century, the APA and the DSM, which you guys have heard us talk about on just about every other episode. So the term bipolar means two poles, signifying the polar opposites of mania and depression. The term first appeared in the APA, American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders, what we all know as the DSM, in its third revision in 1980. It was that revision that did away with the term mania to avoid calling patients maniacs. Now, in its fifth version, DSM-5 is the most current. The DSM is considered the leading manual for mental health professionals. And I'm going to add, because it doesn't say this, in the United States, because you have the ICD in Europe and other places. It contains diagnostic and treatment guidelines that help doctors maintain the care of many people with bipolar disorder today. And with this, I'm going to pause and see if Dr. Mathis would like to add anything.
So, do you know why Burton suggested treating melancholia with music and dance?
Trying to rewire the brain, maybe?
Yeah, the music helps hit certain emotional regions to moderate the depression. And anytime you're moving your body, you're generating dopamine, which is more of a kind of happy chemical. And yeah, so.
Gotcha.
That's why ADHD people fidget, because their bodies are trying to create more dopamine that they don't have in the prefrontals.
Oh. Okay. I have actually wondered that for some time because I've noticed the behavior, but I didn't understand why, like what that's caused by exactly. Now that makes a whole lot more sense.
That's why a lot of ADHD people are not even consciously aware they're fidgeting, because it's their body going, the brain going, help me, and it's causing the body to, you know, crack knuckles or shake your feet or whatever, because any movement of the body causes, motor movement causes dopamine to be released. That's one reason that when I teach class, I pace all the time.
Gotcha. Okay. That absolutely makes sense, and I think it may help some people. I know a lot of people are acquainted with people in their social circles that have that fidget where, like, the leg is just bouncing uncontrollably. And I think they either think it's just being annoying or something. Like, they don't realize the person may not be aware of it, or they're aware of it and they don't know why they're doing it, and they may be a little self-conscious about it. So
yeah,
this
it's
may
funny
help
because
some people
I'll catch
out.
I'll catch a lot of when I do testing on the ADHD folks. They'll be shaking their feet under the table or playing with a pencil or something. And I go, so do you do that all the time in class? What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. Do what?
Right. It was funny because I had this one gal who basically hummed to herself when she between tasks to keep her brain going. And I said, hey, do you do that in class too? And she goes, what are you talking about? I'm like, that humming you do. Oh, my God, was I humming? And she had this look of horror on her face. It was
so
cute. It was so cute. I really felt bad for her. But, yeah, I mean, they don't do it to be annoying. They do it because they don't know they're doing it because their body's, you know, trying to generate dopamine so they can help their brain out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And we'll get to that in a later section. We're going to talk about the role of, like, serotonin and dopamine and how chemicals can help alleviate some of this stuff. So maybe that'll help some people out tonight. Yeah. Don't feel bad if you fidget. It may not be your fault. You know, we'll try to help you out tonight and see if we can get that to calm down a little bit.
There you go.
All right. So, section two, an overview of bipolar disorder today. In this section, we want to talk about the current understanding of bipolar disorder. Source for this first part is healthline.com. And they said, most people have emotional ups and downs from time to time, but if you have a brain condition called bipolar disorder, your feelings can reach abnormally high or low levels. Sometimes you may feel immensely excited or energetic, and at other times you may find yourself sinking into a deep depression. Some of these emotional peaks and valleys can last for weeks or months. So there are basically four types of bipolar disorder, and this is going to be expanded on in a minute. Bipolar 1, bipolar 2, which is the one that most people have heard of. Cyclothymic, is it thymic or thymic? I think it's thymic, isn't it?
Yeah, cyclothymic disorder is essentially a wimpy version. It's a disorder that doesn't meet the bipolar criteria. It's a wimpy version of mood swings that don't meet the bipolar criteria, because there's really only two kinds of bipolar 1, bipolar 2, but then there's like two or three variations under each one of those. So there's actually six types. It gets very confusing. That's why when I teach bipolar...
Technically all these answers are right, you know.
When I teach bipolars to undergraduates, I just say, just think about it as two major types of bipolar with subsets under those two, and you don't need to get crazy. Bipolar 1 is the one most people think of when they think of bipolar.
Bipolar 1 is? Really? Okay.
Yeah. Bipolar 1 is the one with the mania, with the uber mania. Bipolar 2 is less obvious. The mania isn't quite as manic-y. It's kind of more... hypomanic-y, for lack of a better term.
Good.
But, yeah.
Cool. Well,
but
that's a great segue, because I'm about to expand on those in a second. So that's exactly what we're going to get into.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't clip you there. Okay.
It's perfectly fine, because that's exactly where we are right now. So other than the cyclothymic disorder, and we're going to re-explain that in a second, and it is pretty much as Dr. Mathis is trying to explain now, and other specified and unspecified bipolar and related disorders, which is kind of a catch-all for things that don't color neatly between the lines, but kind of smells like bipolar, and we'll get to all that in a second. So bipolar 1 and 2 disorders are more common than the other types. The main
yes.
difference between bipolar 1 and 2 lies in the severity of the manic episodes caused by each type, and this is also
yep.
what Dr. Mathis was getting at. A person with bipolar 1 will experience a full-blown manic episode, while a person with bipolar 2 will experience only a hypomanic episode, which is a period that's less severe. A person with bipolar 1 may or may not experience a major depressive episode, while a person with bipolar 2 will experience a major depressive episode. And the psychothymic disorder describes briefer periods of hypomanic symptoms alternating with briefer periods of depressive symptoms that are not as extensive or as long-lasting, as seen in full hypomanic episodes or full depressive episodes. So it's kind of bipolar light, if you want to
yeah.
simplify it for the lay people. Okay, the next section is notes on the diagnostic criteria out of the DSM-5. Now, I'm going to read these off to you guys, and I am strongly requesting, do not use this as a checklist to be an armchair psychologist. This is for you to go, oh, I should go talk to a real one. Okay,
yeah.
So we have this agreement when I read this. This is not for you to do this by yourself. It needs interpretation from a professional. So despite the above simplistic summary, the actual DSM-5 diagnostic criteria have 7 different variants. So bipolar 1 disorder meets the full criteria for a manic episode with 3 or more of the following things. More talkativeness, increased grandiosity, less need for sleep for long periods of time, racing thoughts, decreased attention span, an increase in risk-taking behaviors, more energy, as Dr. Mathis likes to put it, all psyched up and nowhere to go, as he mentioned earlier, or irritability. So in order to be bipolar 1, you should have 3 or more of something on that list. Bipolar 2 meets the full criteria for hypomania and a depressive episode with 5 or more of this following list: depressed mood, alterations in sleep, alterations in eating patterns, lowered energy or fatigue, suicidal ideations, trouble concentrating or making decisions, a sense of worthlessness or guilty feelings, restless feelings, a loss of interest in and enjoyment in previously pleasurable activities. So 5 or more of those. The psychothymic disorder is someone who doesn't meet the criteria for bipolar 1 or 2, but has symptoms of less frequency or severity for a period of 1 year if it's a child or a teenager, or 2 years or more if it's an adult. The next kind is substance or medication-induced bipolar and related disorders. When you experience bipolar symptoms while coming off of or in withdrawal from or while under the influence of a medication or a substance, you know, like illegal substance. Next one is bipolar and related disorders due to another medical condition. And that's where you have symptoms that are actually due to a co-occurring medical condition, for example, TMI, traumatic brain injury, strokes, TIAs, which are mini strokes, migraine headaches, or MS. Any of these pathologies can create similar symptoms to bipolar. Other specified bipolar-related disorders is those who evidence bipolar disorder symptoms that don't fit any of the usual categories, and the clinician provides examples in the diagnosis. So this one is very subjective and needs interpretation professionally. It's kind of a catch-all for the other stuff. And then unspecified bipolar and related disorders are those who evidence bipolar disorder symptoms that don't fit any of the usual categories, and the clinician does not give examples in the diagnosis for whatever their reason is. Okay. So the next part is the neurochemicals that are involved with bipolar disorder. And this may come into play later when it comes to talking about some of the meds that people use and also some supplements or changes in food or lifestyle changes generating certain chemicals in the body. These are the ones that come into play in various ways. First is what they call GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid.
Butyric
acid. Butyric acid, pardon. That's usually, GABA is lower in people that have bipolar diagnosis. B, glutamate. C, dopamine. Big surprise.
Yeah.
D, norepinephrine. E, serotonin. F, acetylcholine. Am I saying it right?
Acetylcholine.
Acetylcholine. Okay. Endorphins. Vasopressin.
Yeah, it's actually, that's a typo on my part. It's vasopressin.
Oh, pardon me.
That should be an S, not a C.
Okay.
I screwed that up. It's vasopressin. Yeah.
Fix that after the fact, so at least I know what the heck I was talking about. Thank you. oxytocin, which is usually higher than normal with bipolar patients. And the last one is somatostatin, which has
perfect.
Something to do with sleep, but I don't quite know what it is.
Yes.
All right. So that is the notes on the chemicals involved and how to diagnose it. And at this point, I'm going to pause and check in with Dr. Mathis and see if he would like to go back to any of these and talk.
Now, all I'm going to say is this is why, if you notice, if you look at the symptoms of bipolar 1, imagine somebody with ADHD who is in crisis that shows up at an emergency room doing number 1, number 2, number 4, number 5, which they have anyway, and number 7. And they're in the emergency room for 10 minutes, and the emergency room physician declares they're on a manic phase of bipolar disorder and hand them lithium.
Jesus.
And
yeah.
That's because once you get uber ADHD, if ADHD people get uber agitated to the point where they're like having a histrionic fit, they will start to shake. They'll produce too much dopamine in the bipolar. When bipolar 1 people get too agitated, they start shaking the dopamine receptors of psychotic disorders, and they can get temporarily psychotic, and they'll get misdiagnosed as schizophrenia.
That sounds sticky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is why sometimes you'll see people go in because they're going in under crisis. They'll end up at the ER, right, or one of those doc in the boxes, and they're in crisis. So they're having extreme periods of their disorder, and they start to mimic other disorders. And part of that's because bipolar, schizophrenia, and ADHD all have dopamine in common. And so when you start screwing with the dopamine, even though they're different dopamine receptors in different parts of the brain, when you jack, you know, when you steroid the dopamine receptors up, so to speak, because you're uber pissed off or uber frustrated or whatever, you can start to jiggle the nearby ones, and you start to look like one of the other disorders. And that's why anybody going into an ER under a crisis period who gets diagnosed with, quote-unquote, diagnosed with one of these, they need to go check that out Monday. They do not need to go immediately and buy, you know, a lifetime supply of Ritalin or, you know, Thorazine or lithium carbonate.
Yeah.
Or Abilify. That's a newer drug for bipolar.
Got it.
That actually, I can't tell you how many times that's happened to people. I had a gal come in about, I don't know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and brought her 12-year-old in, who was extremely histrionic and extremely ADHD, and had gone in and was having a basically hissy shit fit, and she couldn't control him. He was breaking shit and going crazy, and they took him to the ER, and the ER doc goes, "Oh, your son is having his first manic episode. 12 years old? Are you kidding me? That's almost it happens." Or to quote Judy Tenuta, it could happen, but it's very rare. Most people have their first manic episode late teens at the earliest. I've seen one kid in my office who was 14 and a half that had a full-blown manic episode to the point where he was delusional. But his father had bipolar disorder and was in prison for all kind of bad things that he had done under manic episodes and didn't want to take his meds and yada yada. So this kid shows up at the ER and the doc goes, oh, he's got bipolar disorder. Here's, and this is like on a Friday, I'm going to give you enough lithium to carry over for a week. Oh, I want you to call your physician and get this kid on lithium right now. So the mom goes home and starts Googling side effects of lithium, and she's like, oh, hell no. And goes to the school and says, do you guys have anybody who can assess my kid? And one of the counselors at the school was a former student of mine. And she goes, oh, he needs Mathis. And that's how I got the referral. So the kid walks into my office, and I'm thinking to myself, this kid's about as bipolar as I am. And I start talking to him, and I said to the mom, okay, was he doing this? Was he doing that? Yeah. Was he doing this? Was he doing that? Yeah. Typically, does he do this and this? Yeah. How'd you know all that? Okay. Well, here's the good news. Yeah. We don't have bipolar disorder. Throw that shit in the garbage can. And she had wisely not given it to him because the side effects scared the crap out of her. And she decided she was going to get a second opinion, which was a very smart maneuver on her part. So,
what would you probably say to, you know, whether they're parents of somebody or the adults themselves going into an emergency situation or a new doctor who doesn't really know them and they start giving these off-the-cuff diagnoses, and sometimes they can't help it because they're under pressure in an emergency situation.
Oh, absolutely. And I am not slamming the doc at all. I'm just saying – You know, you're seeing somebody in a stress situation. You're not getting the real picture of what they're like normally.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this kid definitely had ADHD, but he did not have bipolar disorder. It was like, oh my God. Yeah.
Okay. So, because I know that is one of your fortes as a doctor that, you know, I talk about quite often is how many people get misdiagnosed because everything is, you know, the insurance companies dictate how you do stuff. There's a magic checklist, and if you color outside the lines, they stop the process or they won't pay for it or they scream and yell. And meanwhile, people don't get the help they need because they're just being told to shut up and color.
Right, and most managed care companies won't keep you in their wheelhouse if you give testing. They want you to die. They want, at least us, they want us to diagnose with no testing. They want us to diagnose on intake. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm really good, but I'm not God. That extra O in that word is like really important. So,
yes.
Yeah. Definitely. Just saying.
All right. And that's a very good segue to our next part, which is myths and misconceptions about bipolar disorder. And those can happen to the people who've got it and people out in the world who don't know you've got it and doctors who don't know you've got it. So let's dive in and talk about that.
Sure.
So since bipolar disorder has been somewhat common knowledge in our society for a few decades now, there are also, unfortunately, the inevitable half-truths, outdated science, self-diagnosing, and other flawed misunderstandings that come with the passage of time without rigorous information, updates, and scrutiny. It's like y'all play the game of telephone when you're kids. This is kind of like the science version of that. Everybody's been yapping about it since you just, you know, threw drugs at people in the 80s and nobody's updated anything. And, you know, it's almost 2020.
Yep.
So let's discuss some common mistaken notions about bipolar disorder and clear up the facts as needed. So back in episodes 24 and 25 of this show in the year 2017, we talked about a phenomenon that I call pathology chic and how movies, TV, and books portrayed various pathologies, which often led to erroneous stereotypes in pop culture and society. So there is a section on bipolar. Among the misconceptions about bipolar disorder in TV, film, and books are the following. Previously known as manic depression. Several misconceptions are people with bipolar disorder can think positive and snap out of it if they really just try. Bipolar disorder is just frequent mood swings. Some people who have it are afraid to show emotion or make a change in their lives, lest those around them regard it as having an episode. And that's actually, I said that a little more sarcastically than it deserves, that people are actually afraid to be emotional or change anything because everybody around them will go, oh, you're just being bipolar about it. You're deciding out of your pathology, so they never talk about anything because they don't want to get mocked. Bipolar disorder is a rare condition. No, it's not. When bipolar people are manic, they look happy. Nope. There is a test for bipolar, and they mean like you can't go to a lab and squirt somebody with a chemical and find out if they're bipolar. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
There's, you can give them the mumpy and probably figure it out if you do your diligence.
There's not a medical test per se. Yeah, right.
Right, exactly. Bipolar disorder can't be diagnosed until age 18. 99.99999% of the time. There are exceptions, but that's what they are. They are exceptions that prove the rule. This is not usually a children or a teen's pathology unless there's something extenuating. People with bipolar disorder should not take antidepressants or they'll go manic. That's between you and your doctor. Your doctor will figure out what you should be putting in your mouth hole. So leave it to them. Another popular but erroneous assumption, which is incidentally rather common with people who tend to self-diagnose or diagnose others while having no professional qualifications to do so, is that people who authentically have bipolar disorder can quickly cycle from mania to depression in a matter of minutes or hours. I don't actually know what to call that. So, Dr. Mathis, what do you call somebody that actually does appear to go manic to depression and back and forth within hours during the same day? What would you call that? A histrionic? Or
yes.
Like,
yeah,
what would
exactly.
You call
it? So
okay.
Generally, when you see somebody who does that, they usually fall into one of the categories. They're either a borderline, they're a histrionic, both of which are cluster B personality disorders. They have co-occurring anxiety and depression at the same time. And they're having like a manic, like a panic attack, like a panic episode. And then after the panic episode, they're like, oh my God, I just screwed up. And they get depressed and self-castigatory about having the, you know, histrionic episode or the panic attack or whatever. So usually it's one of those three. Or they're under the influence of some chemical that they shouldn't be taking.
Got it. So, in other words, you know, they may have anxiety and depression, but not mania and depression when
right,
this is
exactly.
going on.
And, that's a real common thing. You know, I think I've mentioned before on the show when we've talked about it, you know, if you have an anxiety disorder and you've had it for more than 2 or 3 years, you're probably going to have a couple of anxiety disorders. A case, a new patient just came in today that I suspect that's going to be the case with this person. And if you have an anxiety disorder for more than 2 years, you have something like more than a 90-something percent chance of having a co-occurring depression or dysthymia disorder diagnosis. So you can see where, and you can see where that, if under uber stress, those folks can act out in a somewhat histrionic-y, panicky kind of way, and it could look like mania or hypomania, and it's not.
Gotcha. Yeah, that is a real good, you know, misconception to clean up. I cannot tell you how many times somebody has said, I'm manic depressive and I cycle in, you know, in hours. And I just, ever since I have gotten to know you and we've talked about this, I just look at them like, please wither and stop speaking. And well, people romanticize this. They try to make it sound cool. I mean, that was part of why we did the whole episode on pathology chic, because you see that in movies and on TV, and they make it sound cool, you know. Is there anything else that you want to get into as far as misconceptions or false premises or other things like that when it comes to this particular pathology that we haven't already addressed?
No, let's talk about coping skills.
Okay, coping skills are good. So, suggestions for coping and mitigating symptoms. While doctors do not definitively yet have confirmation of precisely what causes bipolar disorder, there have been several studies and reports that have made some progress, and it has been considered to be a strong possibility that in addition to an inherited or genetic component, that diet and certain supplements may be able to mitigate or lessen the symptoms or severity of the disorder. The proverbial gold standard for prescription treatment is lithium, although many users complain that it takes away too much of their emotional edges and leaves them feeling somewhat indifferent and numb. In other words, like happiness is kind of dull and the depression is kind of dull too, but they just sort of don't feel much of anything and they don't like it.
Yeah, they have kind of a flat
like
affect.
It,
and it
yes,
also, unfortunately,
exactly.
leads to weight gain.
Oh, yes, also a big thing.
Yeah.
And like any prescription drug, it can have side effects for some people, although it also helps many of them. So please consult with a qualified psychiatrist as to whether this choice is good for you. This is not, we can't make this decision for you. All we can do is let you know it does one of several of these things, and we won't know which it does for you until you talk to your doctor.
Right.
So with that in mind, we have some suggestions that are about holistic choices and supplements and food choices, because anyone can do them, and all of these suggestions won't hurt you. At the worst, they just won't work, but there's nothing on here that's harmful. You don't need your insurance company to sign off on it. You can just go to the store and get your stuff and do your thing. So here's some holistic suggestions for helping control the disorder with specific supplements, followed by a vetted paper that I'm going to read to you guys. I got from Dr. Mathis on the therapeutic use of probiotics to help with symptoms. Some people want to try another approach besides prescriptions. Additionally, due to current pandemic circumstances, many people are without medical insurance or have related reasons why their access to mental health professionals is limited for the time being. And most holistic steps can be done at home with minimal supervision by your mental health professional. Or worst case scenario, your GP. Just let them know what you are changing, what you're taking, and they can probably supervise you at least for the time being with this. So the first part is from an article by Dr. Richard P. Humer in an article found in Your Health, and he gives these suggestions on holistic alternatives for bipolar disorder. First part is from James and Phyllis Balsh in Prescription for Nutritional Healing, which is published by Avery in 1997. Amino acids are important in controlling this disorder, especially L-taurine and L-tyrosine, which should be taken in doses of 500 milligrams each. And I'm really glad to see that. I had a friend on social media last night who is ADHD and lives in a southern state nearby yours where doctors are really ignorant and won't medicate her properly. And this is one of the ways that she copes when she's out of meds is to take that. And I actually found out what it does with the dopamine. And I'm trying to try out and see if that might help with my PTSD issues. So I've just started taking that a couple days ago. Yeah. So we're going to wait and see if it helps out at all. Cause you know, I have dopamine and serotonin issues from being in fight or flight for years. So, you know, that can probably help quite a few things. So, so far, so good. They also mentioned L-taurine is taken 3 times a day on an empty stomach with 50 milligrams of B6 and 100 milligrams or more of vitamin C. The L-tyrosine is taken twice daily on an empty stomach. Now, the ones I have are 500 per pill, so I can't really do it twice daily. I'd be doing 1,000. So I guess you have to do it with the littler ones or something. Or are you implying they should take 1,000 milligrams total? I'm a little fuzzy on the wording here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you asking me?
Yes, because this is from your paper
that
you sent me.
Yeah, or you can take a time release version if you can find one of those.
Oh, okay, good to know. All right.
And the reason that they recommend you take the B6 with it is because that helps the transport and the bioavailability of the taurine.
Ah, okay, good. Do they make it on the market with those included, like some kind of a multiple?
No. Not that I'm aware of, but I would take a B complex. A B complex that's time release along with the tyrosine and the taurine. Because any of the B's, B's good for you. But thanks, I'll be here all week. And
And that's my time, ladies and gentlemen. We were waiting on that.
and they help they help protect it from being biodegraded before they get into the system. Well,
good. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
All right. The second suggestion is high oral dosages of you were just saying this, of a multiple B complex, which acts in a similar manner to lithium carbonate, which is the medication they often prescribe. The third suggestion is to avoid the following things in your diet: caffeine, nicotine, soda, alcohol, sugars, dairy products, especially cheese. That was a little surprising. Why the cheese?
Because it has tyramine in it. It's aged. Anything aged, like wine and any kind of stuff, it has a tendency to exacerbate it. The reason you avoid the sugar is because it jacks up your hypoglycemic, the same reason with alcohol, jacks up your hypoglycemic level. Same thing with sodas. And then the caffeine and the nicotine, obviously, if you have mania, that's like not a good thing to do.
You don't want uppers. Yeah, got it.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
And the last suggestion, any foods to which you have sensitivities or allergies, you know, you should be avoiding
any. Yeah, because you're going to have a much larger response in general if you have food sensitivities to somebody who doesn't have bipolar who has food sensitivities, because your brain's already kind of sensitive already.
Good.
Yeah.
Good to know. So that's important to bear in mind.
Yes, ma'am.
And then the fourth suggestion is another diet one. Include as much as you can of any of the following things which will help you: whole grains, nuts, seeds, fresh fruit, vegetables, legumes, turkey, and fish, especially oily fish that has increased omega in it. And then now we have the vetted paper I was telling you guys about. That's probiotics may offer therapeutic benefits for bipolar patients. This is by Sally Robertson. What degree is BSC? I don't know that acronym.
Bachelor of Science.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen it put that way before. Okay, so Sally has a Bachelor of Science. Good for her. So a study from Baltimore's Shepherd Pratt Health System has shown, pardon my hiccups, that probiotics may serve as a potential therapeutic approach to bipolar disorder and other psychiatric conditions. All right. Lead author Faith Dickerson and colleagues found that among patients hospitalized for mania, those who received a probiotic saw more beneficial effects than those who received a placebo. In the U.S., approximately 3 million people are diagnosed with bipolar disorder every year. The condition is characterized by dramatic shifts in mood from depression to mania. The standard treatment approach is a combination of psychotherapy and mood-stabilizing drugs or antipsychotics. Recently, probiotics has been explored as a potential new avenue for treatment. These non-pathogenic or good bacteria are known to improve the general health of the host when they are present in the gut flora. And when they say the host, it makes it sound like it's a parasite coming.
Yeah.
Now, scientists have shown the supplementation with probiotics may reduce inflammation in the gut, a factor that is known to exacerbate bipolar disorder. Oh, see, this is interesting now. I don't have data
and
on
ADHD.
This. Is there an increase
and
in...
Exacerbates, and it could
exacerbate
schizophrenia and exacerbate ADHD as well. Gut health, it cannot be underestimated.
Do you see more than normal bipolar disorder being comorbid with autoimmune disorders?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Inflammation. Okay. A lot of people don't take that very seriously because we're very flip about that term, but it actually is a bit more serious than our pop culture treats it. And here's a good example of why. So research has revealed a strong association between the gastrointestinal tract and central nervous system, referred to as the gut-brain axis, or GBA. This GBA enables the communication of information between the immune, endocrine, and autonomic nervous systems. The intestine is also home to the gut biome, microbiome, which is made up of about 100 trillion microorganisms that interact with the mucosal lining of the gut. Studies have recently shown that the relationship between the gastrointestinal tract tissue and the gut microbiome has a significant impact on the GBA. Furthermore, a growing body of evidence has suggested that microbial imbalances are associated with health problems including psychiatric mood disorders. Previous studies have also shown that inflammation is a contributing factor in bipolar disorder. Taking this into consideration, Dickerson and colleagues developed a probiotic that was designed to reduce the inflammation that arises when microbial species are imbalanced in the intestine. Over the course of 6 months, patients that had been hospitalized for mania were randomly assigned to receive either the probiotic or a placebo, in addition to any drug they were already taking. The study demonstrated that those who took the probiotic generally did not return to the hospital as quickly as those who took the placebo. They also required less inpatient treatment time. The effect was strongest among those who had abnormally high levels of intestinal inflammation at baseline. Overall, the findings suggest that the course of psychiatric mood disorders can be influenced by changes in gut inflammation, and that altering the gut microbiota could provide a new therapeutic approach in the management of patients suffering from such conditions. And with this, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything else that you would like to add.
I just wanted to say that people grossly underestimate the role that gut health plays in the brain because, as I mentioned, and I think in an earlier show, something like, and I forgot the exact percentage, but it's very, very high. It's like 80% of your serotonin is produced in the gut and it gets sent to the brain. So it's not made in the brain, most of it. And so if you've got really shitty gut health, you're going to be at more risk for depression and other mood disorders as well.
That is good to know. And I had forgotten that you mentioned that. So I don't think that's common knowledge. So that's super important.
No, it is
not. I hope you guys hang on to this and remember it better than I do. Remember, I have CRS right now. So.
Well, the other problem is a lot of medications they give, particularly for cancer patients, kills all the gut biome because they want to restart the system. So while they're in the process of restarting the system, their gut biomes are, you know, screwed, and you'll start to see them having an increase in depression, like the cancer wasn't enough, right, to cause depression. Zeroing out gut motility stuff to do a different treatment regimen, and that just makes the depression that much worse.
Yeah. And I know in some cases like that, it's even harder because if you're trying to affect digestion and the gut biome and all that, you're dealing with people who medically don't feel like eating in the first place. So trying to get them to change those habits, like if you get anything down them, you're lucky. So it's an even harder struggle. But
Absolutely.
Hopefully doctors will push harder to find ways to try to get this going. Because it seems like it's actually making a clinical difference that is empirically being backed up here.
Yep.
So in conclusion, we hope now that our listeners better understand bipolar disorder and are disabused of pop culture and armchair psychology sensibilities regarding this pathology. So hopefully we've provided you guys with the ability to effectively speak about its relevance with a mental health provider if needed, and provided some resources and solutions that could prove useful to you. Sorry, I'm having trouble talking. All right, so this concludes our show on bipolar disorder. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we wrap up?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
All righty. So on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, I want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation also to those of you who may be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. So we'll see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion on Wednesday, August 19th, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on blogtalkradio.com. We'd also like to give a shout out to other NDB Media shows coming up in the next couple of weeks. Tomorrow night, Travel Itch Radio is, for the first time in nearly 400 episodes, Travel Itch Radio presents a look at the celebrated Sierra Club, when Sierra Magazine adventure and lifestyle editor Katie O'Reilly is their special guest. Listen live as Dan Schlossberg and Mary Ellen Nugent-Lee learn all about the magazine and the club. And that's at 8 p.m. tomorrow night. On Saturday, the 8th, Sports Talk with the Guys, Saturday morning extravaganza, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The Monday morning quarterbacks are live on Saturday morning. No one is safe while they troll the digital airwaves. So join them as they discuss the latest news in the world of sports and review the events of the past week. No fantasy sports here. They keep it real. My other alternative show, we actually have an update for you guys. The Walking Dead Online Viewing Party. Sunday, April 5th was a temporary Season 10 finale due to work stoppage related to COVID. And that was Season 10, Episode 15, The Tower. Episode 16, A Certain Doom, is going to air on October 14th. And Season 10 has been extended by 6 episodes. Basically, look, guys, COVID ruined everything, so they're doing some weird stuff to try to salvage the storyline of the show because they have 2 other shows that are also balancing. The new 3rd Walking Dead series, World Beyond, is also going to premiere afterwards on So I have October 14th and October 4th, and I'm not sure which of these dates is right, but it's going to be October, and it'll be on the same night, whichever one of those it is. I'll try to clean that up before next time. And, okay, it must be the 4th, because here The Walking Dead is going to air on the following weekend, which is the 11th. So basically, when the fall comes, they will have enough time to get staff back to do the editing and finish up the footage that they already shot and get back on track. So that's the deal with that. Monday Night in America with Roger Noriega and Dr. Mathis's Microwave. that'll be on Monday the 10th. Roger Noriega brings you his unique take on politics, current events, entertainment, sci-fi, and history. Fandom Access Week in Review, Tuesday the 11th. Join the chatty critics Jamie Kieran and AJ as they digest another night of TV. And Jedi Tax Radio on Sunday, September 6th. A new show airing monthly on First Sundays, Rogelio D. Noriega, CRTP, with 33 years of income tax preparation experience. We'll be discussing the latest news in income taxes, ongoing issues for taxpayers, and tax preparers. If you have a question that you need answered, contact them on Twitter at the IRS Man. That's his handle on Twitter. Special guests and co-hosts will join him, and also see him at Jedi.tax and his Twitter account. Please look for us on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a good evening, and rock on.